I'm Vin.
I'm Sori.
That's Boomy.
And Jolty and Ghosty and Chip.
Oh, Iron Maiden.
So this is a...
This is a... For the...
Was this an Alliance pick or...
No, we're not into the Alliance picks yet. We gotta... We're doing our 75s first. Okay, so this
no
one...
No football tomorrow. Just recording. Seriously.
This one is for Shane.
Okay. Shout out to Big Home Shane.
I'm pretty sure that this is the Shane that... Remember... I'm not positive, but it might be the guy that does the Tool. He does like his own music that sounds like Tool. Remember we listened to his song? We saw his band playing. It was like kind of purplish.
Oh, yeah. That's the same guy?
I think it is, but I'm not
sure.
Hey,
shout out to the big homie. What's up, homie? if it's the guy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it is.
Okay. So this is Starblind by Iron Maiden.
Yep.
For timely topical political commentary, you can hit us up in Middle America with Vin and Sori. This is, I'm pretty interested to hear this because it's Iron Maiden, obviously, and I haven't heard Maiden in such a long time!
I know, it's about time.
So thank you very much, sir, for requesting an Iron Maiden song. Good lord. Alright, let's do it.
Go. Whoops, go.
Swimming to the dark and far beyond. We will dance some more.
Well, I missed hearing Iron Maiden.
I did. I wished I could have had, you know, that...
What?
Running moment. Oh. They had the... like, you know, the Iron Maiden style that makes you want to run a mile and mm-hmm. such. Didn't really get a lot of that on this particular song, which... It came out in 2010. Maybe they were trying to do something different.
Maybe, I don't know.
You know, sonically.
I thought it had like a rising sound to it, and I liked it.
Well, it's Iron Maiden. I mean, these guys are never going to rank anything below a 9.
Well, yeah, I'm sure I've given them lower than a 9, but I feel like I'm evolving in my musical understanding. Because I can hear, yeah, now that I'm listening to it this time, I'm like, wait, yeah, you can't give these people anything lower than a 9. That's insane.
Iron Maiden!
So forgive me if I rated them lower than a 9 before.
What did you,
Oh, we're interrupting this program. Vinny's playing some Fortnite. I just wanted to remind everybody that we're doing that baby shower stuff for Lo. So if you're interested, check out the link in the description of this video and you'll be able to find her baby registry and also the link to be able to see the video that we did with her. So you'll get a chance to meet her. So hopefully you guys can thank you, Vin, for that. He's obviously losing. Anyway, enjoy
the video. What do you think the song is about?
I don't know. There was something about religion, and it kind of... I don't know. If I was to take a wild stab at it, I'd say basically follow your own path of what your religion is and choose to live or die, whatever you're going to decide, and go with it. Because, I don't know, it said something about the preacher at the end.
Whatever God you know, he knows you better than you believe.
Yeah. You don't find your religion finds you. I'm not sure.
Well,
I have no idea.
Yeah, it's, this is a very interesting song. Let the elders, left the elders to their parlay meant to satisfy our lust.
Leaving isn't parlay, still. Isn't that, is that like what the, our pirates, the what? Pirates, they say parlay, isn't that what they say if you want to, like, you have to bring them straight to the leader. Like, if you're going to get killed and then you say, parley, then they have to bring you to the captain.
Oh, well, I guess. But I thought parley was kind of like to lounge around and
I don't know.
Lust and left whatever, the whatever. Leaving Damocles still hanging, which obviously is probably a reference to the Sword of Damocles, which talks about, like, living in a situation of an ever-present threat.
Uh-oh.
It's kind of like the Sword of Damocles. Like, it's always there hanging over you.
Oh, okay.
Leaving Damocles still hanging over all their promised trust, walk away from freedoms offered by their jailers in their cage.
Interesting.
Which is interesting. Walk away from freedoms offered by their jailers in their cage. Which is, these jailers are offering you freedom.
But they're in a cage.
But they themselves
offering.
Are in a
yeah.
cage.
Yeah, no.
Which I think is a dig at religion, right?
Yeah.
Because you're saying the truth will set you free and you're offering freedom, but they are in the cage and the cage is religion.
Yeah.
Which I agree and disagree with depending on how you're defining terms, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you're defining terms like... If you're defining religion as a bunch of people who judge other people and make whether or not you're good with God... based on how well you follow rules and all that,
mm-hmm.
then I would say, yes, this is accurate. If you define religion as following Jesus, working towards a new world,
mm-hmm.
understanding that you are a son and a daughter of God, and
mm-hmm.
so, you know, what motivates me to do things or not do things has nothing to do with the Sword of Damocles, because
mm-hmm.
I think the Sword of Damocles is probably this whole constant threat of hell, right?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
And so to me, as a Christian, the threat of hell is gone because of what Jesus did on the cross. So
mm-hmm.
I my Muslim friends are like, well, then if all your sins are taken care of, why are you doing good things? And the answer is, well, because I love God and I love my neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm motivated completely by love. I'm not motivated by, I'm not motivated completely by love. If I was, I would never do anything wrong to anyone, which obviously is not true. But when I am doing something good, the threat of hell is not even anywhere in the conception. Sometimes I'll be God-like, well, just do this for me. Because
mm-hmm.
there's times I'm like, yo, like, this person or whatever, whatever. And he's like, well, yeah, but just do it for me. And then I go, fine.
Does he ever do that? I'll do it for you. Huh?
No.
Oh.
No. You're a pretty easy person to love. But there are other people that I work with and other people in my life who are not easy people to love. And so, you know, So, if you're talking about, like, rules-based religion that always carries some horrible threat with it, mm-hmm. then I, yeah, though, and I, we've seen people like that. Like, they're absolutely in cages, and they live very fearfully, mm-hmm. and they, you know.
Well, I think that, you know, you explained it this way one time, which I think is really true, is when something has a particular nature and you set that thing free within its nature, then it allows it to have true freedom.
Right.
So if you take a bird that should be open flying all around the islands,
right.
and you trap them into not just a small bird cage, but a nice big cage, but right. it's still not the islands.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Like when that bird gets free into the space that he was created to be free in it, then he finds his true freedom. And I think that sometimes people get into religion because they're looking for maybe some sort of fix for their bad feelings or for this or that. And then once they're in their religion, they haven't really found the freedom that comes with what can be had through God. Instead, they've grasped onto some like religion that people have put, oh, you have to do this, you can't do that, blah, blah, blah. And then they don't end up actually being a free person. What they end up being is just like that, a jailer in its own cell trying to tell somebody else that they can have freedom. Well, you can't give freedom if you're caged up like that.
Right.
Like, you know, I think that a lot of people, we see messages all the time of people who are like, I never considered religion until I heard you guys talking about it. I really like the way that you guys are, you know, put things and stuff like that. And we wouldn't say that we're positioning things any particular way. We're just going for what we really believe it to be. So it's not like we're like trying to position this. It's just, it is what it is. And I think that a lot of people are like, well, that doesn't look so bad, that version.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because it's the free version.
Well, yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing is that happens so many times. Like, I like your version of,
mm-hmm. All the time.
And, like, I know what they're saying and it's a compliment and I take it as a compliment. They're being genuine. But at the same time, to me, I'm kind of mm-hmm. like, but you said that to me too, though. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like, and I've always kind of been confused about that because I'm just talking about, most of the time, I'm just talking about my experience with God or with Christ or with, you know, in my life. I'm not, mm-hmm. I'm not particularly certain about what exactly it is that I'm saying that's different from anything else.
Well, I mean, I've told you before that the way that you look at things, like, I mean, I can't go into the details, but you were telling me about something about the states the other day. You know what
yeah.
I mean? And people were not thinking outside of the box. It had to be like one certain way instead of just like you were pointing out, well, this doesn't make any sense, you know? And sometimes people are like, this is the system that's set up. And they say, this makes sense because it's a system, because it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And you question everything, not because it's cool to question everything, but that's who you are. And so, like, I would question things, but I couldn't really come to any real good conclusion on it. So I'd just be like, well, there's a question. There's another question.
Mm-hmm.
And then I never felt like, you know, I would ask my pastor or I'd ask my parents or I'd ask my teachers and nobody had good answers. And everybody seemed to just get irritated by the questions. So when I met you and you didn't seem offended by me questioning you and questioning more and more and more, you were fine with it. Then it was like, oh, okay, well, this is cool. So I think that there's a lot of that. Like, people have questions and people think something sounds stupid and they want to be able to say, look, that sounds stupid to me. But people get too offended. Well, that's my belief system.
Yeah, we were in the boogie and something
right.
popped up and Ian's like, I love you, mate, but...
Yeah.
This is dumb.
Yes, and I love Ian for that.
And I don't think the response I gave him undumbed the answer to him.
No.
And we all, you know, he got to say what he had to say,
yeah.
and we just moved on. It, like, people are not always going to agree with you if you're a religious, you know, whatever. But I definitely see, but to me, like, that type of insecurity to questioning tells me that those people truly don't really believe what they're saying.
Or they just don't have the answers themselves.
Right, but they're pretending like they believe what they say, or that, like, if I said 2 + 2 = 4,
yeah.
and somebody says, I wouldn't be mad at them. I would just be like, okay, like,
mm-hmm.
and if they came up with some strange equation, I'd say, oh, okay, I see where you're coming from, but to me, mm-hmm. 2 + 2 = 4, it's always going to equal 4. It's not like, I don't get the whole, like, I'm going to be angry at you for questioning my reading of whatever. Like, well, but I do see that. It just seems like a lot of religious people are very, very insecure that what they believe isn't true. And so they get very defensive when they're in the middle of a class or a sermon or something.
Yeah.
And somebody questions them and then...
In front of everybody.
Yeah, then they get upset.
You know, maybe it has something to do with... Remember how, like, the Pharisees and stuff, they walked around with their big robes and they wanted everybody to recognize them and stuff. You know, maybe there's some of that too. Like, you have a position of authority and people are supposed to look to you, and when you get questioned and you don't have a sufficient answer, it doesn't make you look like a good, steady, strong leader. And yeah, maybe it hits their pride, maybe it makes them feel uncomfortable. It could be also that maybe they're not sure that they actually have... Like, the reason that you're confident in 2 plus 2 being 4, regardless of whatever anybody says, is because you have a standard, you have an objective, mathematics, you know what I mean? Like, that's where you're getting your thing from.
Yeah.
It's not something that you came up with on your own. And I think that a lot of times the things that people believe are not necessarily the things that are taught in the scripture or the things that have come from God. And so they're kind of believing something that's not actually from God, and maybe that kind of brings about some level of insecurity.
Well, the crazy thing is, Jesus is a realer truth to me than 2 plus 2 equaling 4.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Mm-hmm.
I just cannot imagine being angry that somebody would, because to me it's just reality.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, your point is well taken. If you don't have that view of God, but you're acting like you do, then when somebody confronts it, you're gonna get nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of, like...
Take it by faith.
Yeah, I think a lot of religious people, like, I think they're... The being surrounded by a bunch of people who agree with you then helps you deal with the lingering, you know, issues that you have instead.
Mm-hmm.
But the advantage of being a person who questions everything, especially since young age, the advantage of that is if you do end up still Christian at the other side, then your faith is unshakable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is why... I don't freak out when the kids have questions, or if the kids say I hate God or da 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 da, which they've all done. No, they all haven't done that, but a couple of them have. Like, it doesn't freak me out. Like,
yeah.
I don't, you know, I'm like, well, they're gonna come out on the other side, like, or they're not. But, you know, me freaking out is not gonna do that. You know, they got to be able to have their own. Star blind with the sun.
Well, freaking out is just gonna make them internalize what they're thinking instead of being able to talk about it openly. So,
well, yeah, and it doesn't. You know, affect my faith.
Uh-huh.
Like, their lack of belief doesn't affect my faith.
Right, yeah.
But.
Listen, this is like an ADD moment for me, but I was listening to something that was talking about, you remember how Job, everything fell in on him, like Job
right.
in the Bible. All the things went wrong, you know, he lost his kids, he lost his home, he lost his money, he lost everything, and his body was afflicted, and he never broke until his friends came to him and discouraged him and said that he was... So it's crazy that, like, all those events could happen to him and that wasn't what broke him, but having bad friends is what broke him.
And they were very religious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe some of you need to get new friends.
That was a very dangerous thing to say there, Sorry. Starblind with sons, the stars are one. I wonder if that's a double entendre, but basically... The sun is a star.
I don't know. I only thought of your Bible book when you did that. Because it said stars are one. A multiple. You know what I mean? Like the whole Trinity.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
What
the
we just did.
Conversation. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The star blind with sun. The stars are one. Yeah, that's interesting, right? Because it's like the sun is a star.
Mm-hmm.
If you're too close to the sun can blind you, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And then you won't be able to see the other stars. So maybe it's talking about you're so blinded by your religion that you cannot see that there are other stars in the universe, not just yours.
Yeah.
Which, again, I agree and disagree with. If this thing is saying, look, there's other concepts and philosophies that can benefit the world, not just yours, then I would probably agree with that to some degree. Like, you know, if you're a secular humanist and you see a poor person, you're probably going to be inclined to help that person, as I am, because of my devotion to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the irony of that, of course, is that there's a lot of people who are naming Christ that would not help the poor person.
Yeah.
And would accuse the poor person of wanting a handout.
Right, right.
And despise the poor person. Yeah. Meanwhile, the atheist secular humanist doesn't care whether or not the guy wants a handout. He sees somebody in trouble, he's going to take care of him. Mm-hmm. Those are facts. Mm-hmm. Those are facts.
Yeah, yeah.
That does not negate the truth claim or value of Christianity or give the secular humanist the upper hand philosophically. It just is a fact
mm-hmm.
that happens all the time in our current political seats in Laban. That's
it's
obvious.
It's interesting, too, because when people talk about it, they're always saying, like, well, I think I'm going in a separate direction than you, but, like, they'll say, oh, well, if you go and you give somebody money on the side of the road, like, you have to know, like, go buy them the stuff instead of giving them the cash because you don't know what they're going to do
sure.
with the money. And, like, everybody, like, they talk
sure.
about that. But there's actually, not that I can think of, any verse in the Bible where it talks about find out what the person's motive is to make sure that you give. We're just supposed to be, we're supposed to be kind. We're supposed to take care of people and do the different things like that. It doesn't say we're supposed to dig down and find the motivation.
Yeah, I think obviously you can meld the give to, you know, whoever asks of you with love your neighbor as yourself. Obviously, in our context where we live, it's kind of calmed down a little bit, bless God, but 2-3 years ago, there was a massive fentanyl epidemic, and people were, like, literally dropping like flies.
Yep.
And so, if I know that this person is going to take this to the fentanyl dealer, then I am, if I love him, I'm not going to help him kill himself.
Mm-hmm.
But that still doesn't let us off the hook from what you're saying, because my issue is, if your first instinct is, oh my God, I hope this guy doesn't OD in fentanyl,
mm-hmm.
because it would kill me to read about him in the paper,
mm-hmm.
then I would say that Jesus would say, okay, you've fulfilled your obligation.
Mm-hmm.
But if your inclination is to say, well, I should give to this guy, but I'm not going to, and there's a fentanyl dealer there, so hey,
mm-hmm.
Who know? How do you know?
Right.
You don't know.
Right.
Then, you know, it's people, but this is one of the things, it's religious people always try to find some loophole to disobey
mm-hmm.
what Christ tells us to do.
But still looking holy about it. Well, I didn't want him to go to the dealer. So
right, right, right. When you know good and well, that's
why
not
you didn't want to help.
You
yeah.
don't want to give the guy your money. That's
right.
what... Can we just be real?
That doesn't sound so good, so you're gonna...
Yeah, and everybody knows it. Like, everybody around you knows that you're a lecherous, penny-pinching
yeah.
bastard, and you wouldn't even do it for your second cousin,
word.
Much less a stranger on the street. Everybody knows that. But that's, you know... So, but when he talks about religion's cruel device, you know,
mm-hmm.
think about, you know, all the horrible things that you know, look, it's very popular to talk about the horrors of religion, and that's fine, but, you know... There's a reason there's a St. Mary's Hospital in every
mm-hmm.
city in America. So, you know, I'm not one of these people that's going to, like, separate myself from the church and bash Christianity
mm-hmm.
to make, you know, secularists feel good. Like, I'm not that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's undeniable fact that there have been times, especially on the western side of the planet, that there have been times when we've knocked it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
And then there have been other times when we have not knocked it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
and our current political zeitgeist provides lots of examples of one more than the other.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, I was talking to the boys about, you know, pornography yesterday. And I, you know, thinking about the Sword of Damocles and you know, because we were having our little man study. And I was saying, look, man, I'm not going to confiscate your phones, and I'm not gonna, you know, spy on you every, you know, 19 hours of the day. And I said, look, if love to Christ and love for your neighbor is not enough to motivate you not to do that, then the threat of me doing something is not how I want you to live.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, which is an extremely dangerous way of looking at it from an evangelical Christian perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I was saying, boys, you know, I told you, I tell them all the time, you can never do anything motivated by guilt or fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to hang the Sword of Damocles over there. I don't want them to watch pornography. I think it's extremely destructive. It's horrible. It's fill in the blank. Especially in the context of our man study, when we're trying to know how to be men and take care of our families and fulfill the dominion mandate and all
right.
the rest of it.
Right.
And so obviously that's the embodiment of everything that's antithetical to to what we're trying to accomplish. However, I think a lot of times Christians default to fear because it's the quickest way to change somebody's behavior.
Yeah.
Whereas love is something that has to get cultivated over time.
Yep.
Fear is an immediate emotion.
Yep.
Oh, there's a dog. Ah! But love is something that takes time to build and to cultivate. And so trying to get people to be motivated by love is a much more complex and difficult moral kind of framework than fear, which is why religious people just default to fear. It's not so much they're bad people, it's just they're lazy. It's laziness, because fear will get you a much quicker result than love will.
I think that, but I also think it's a lack of faith, because if you really believe that it's God that changes people's hearts, and it's God that finds people, that people are lost and God goes and finds them, then you have to say to yourself, God's going to take care of that.
Right.
But if you don't believe that, then you're going to have to say, well, we got to get work with all these other tactics instead of just saying the truth of what it is and letting it... You know, people always say, that's another thing people say, you know, I don't feel like you're cramming your religion down my throat. We don't have to. it's not up to us.
It's true. It's very liberating.
We're doing reactions and you're watching them. That's it. Like
That's all we're doing.
We're reacting and you just hear about the different stuff because it's part of who we are and it's...
And some people want to hear what, like he said in his note that, hey, this sparked interest in discussion.
Yeah.
This will do. And I think, you know, when you talk about like star blind and other things like, and not being able to see the other stars in the universe, I think that especially with the camp that we came from, there is a real resistance to recognizing the beauty and the divinity in other religions.
Yep.
Because then they think you're being a sellout and you're compromising. Yep. Look, I believe what Jesus said. He's the only way to God. However, because other human beings are creating the image and likeness of God, and because the Deuteronomy 32 stuff, which if you're in the Bible, you know. If you're not, sorry, I don't know what to tell you. Michael Heiser, that's the best I can give you. But I see a lot of beauty in other religions. I do not believe that they're the way, because I'm an evangelical Christian, and I'm never going to compromise that. But when my Muslim friends say, yeah, I'll see you tomorrow, inshallah, when they recognize that God is sovereign over us, I love that type of respect, the respect that they have when they refer to their prophet, you know, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Like, they, that to me is beautiful, the way that they incorporate the remembrance of God in everyday life, I think is beautiful. Judaism, you know, that phrase when, you know, if you've killed one person, it's as if you've killed the whole world, and if you've saved one person, that's as if you've saved the whole. Beautiful! Hinduism, Jagannath, you know, the merciful one. Beautiful! Krishna with the so I'm able to see now, because I've come to this sort of, you know, this place in my walk with God where it's like, I don't need to snuff out everybody else's light to say that what I believe is the truth. And actually, the fact that you have to do that indicates once again that your light must not be that bright then.
Right.
Because I believe that Christ's light is so bright and so stark and so different from Hinduism and Islam and Buddhism that I can recognize the beauty and the light in other religions and then prop up Christ and he's going to outshine all of them. You don't need it. You don't need... So that's where I'm taking like the star blind with the sun type of thing. You know, it's like a double entendre, UNON. I think there's just, and again, that's motivated by fear. If I recognize that there's any beauty in any other religion, then where does that leave me? And, you know,
this is interesting, and we can clip this out.
Or even Satanism.
Much, but
there's beauty in Satanism, at least the Satanism that we saw in the video, where they were going out helping their community and all the rest of it. Sorry, but there is. Anything that comes from image bearers of God is going to have some trace of beauty in it and some trace of light in it, because you can't, it's inescapable. So even if you create a satanic coven, like what we saw, was it the Hail Satan documentary, which I keep saying we're going to do a review on, but there are some elements of it that were absolutely beautiful.
Oh yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So I had this dream last night that I was in this path and I was blocked in and there was somebody that was bad that was coming to harm me. And so I covered myself with a black veil and I pretended to be like some dark spirit. And the person was like a Christian, but they were like one of those really superstitious Christians. So the minute they thought it was like some spirit.
Oh my gosh.
So they turned around and they took off because they were too afraid of that.
Yeah.
And then I realized that my path was still blocked in. And I turned around and I saw the path of my life where I had already come. It was swirling behind, it was like swerving behind me. And so I turned around and, well, it was like God's spirit turned me and said, like, he didn't talk. I didn't hear his voice, but I knew his words. And he turned me and we walked the path together and like, it was like, it just looked like a muddy river that didn't look like it was that great. And then like, there was parts of it that just looked like it was like muddy ruts. But then we dove down under the water and underneath was like all this beauty. And then when we popped back up from the water, I noticed that the whole thing was covered with this white, almost like snow, but it wasn't cold like snow. And so he was showing me that even though something looks like a rough, muddy path that doesn't look like it has anything, beneath and on top is grace because there's beauty underneath and beauty on top, and he sandwiches the whole thing in himself. And then I continued down this path and I went into this room that was really small and there was crosses all around the room. And like, I got up really close and I was reading it and I was like, I have to remember these words so I could, cause I knew I was dreaming. I was like, I have to remember these words so I can tell Vinny what they are so he can tell me what they mean. And then I like looked and all of the different crosses in the middle had symbols that represented different religions. So I saw like, I remember seeing like Hindu stuff and all kinds of different ones. And hanging from each of these crosses were vials that had the ashes of deceased people in it. And then I was looking at all of them and I was like, well, I don't understand what you're showing me here. What is this? It seems very important. And then he was telling me that all religions honor the dead and don't desecrate their bodies and desecrate their dead ones that they love because they don't realize it, but each person is made in the image of God and they honor the dead. They honor them because they have value. And he's like, they don't understand the depths of the person's value. But when somebody dies, you know, everybody talks about all the good stuff about them. Nobody really wants to say the bad.
Right.
It's like that. Like in those moments, they're recognizing that, you know, the preciousness of a person because God created them.
Right.
And then from there, I went out of that room and then there was a big cross that was stuck into the ground with rosary beads hanging off of it. And I took the rosary beads and I touched them and then I felt like it wasn't like necessarily like Catholic beads, but the rosary and where the rosary originated. But again, I can't remember where it was. I know that it dates before the Catholics like used it. But he basically said, like, know the roots of this.
Mm-hmm.
What is the roots of it again?
You should. I'm not going to spoon feed you everything. We've had this conversation a million times.
Well, yeah, but all these people, it would be good for them to hear. Well,
do your own research, ladies and gents. I've got my rosary. Well, go ahead.
So, anyway.
Are you going to end up having one?
Probably. There was more to that story, too, that I'll tell you later, but...
Oh, mashallah tabaraka. Looks like God's really speaking to you. So, look, you know...
Well, I'm just going to finish it because there's nothing... Maybe okay. I'm supposed to say the rest of it. So then I went into this room that was like, it looked like an attic and there was like all kinds of stuff stored in there. And it was the things that I had stored within my mind and my spirit and my soul. And he said, God was speaking to me. He said, you keep things that you should throw and you throw things that you should keep. And then I was like, and then like I looked around the room and there was like all kinds of like, yeah, stuff that I could see was just, I'm like, why'd I keep that? Why'd I keep that? And then there was this very, very special cloth and somebody came and brought me the cloth. And this kind of is going to sound a little bit weird. Like I took the cloth and I tried to catch what was rolling out. And what rolled out was, it wasn't a real head. It was like a plastic head of a baby girl. And I said, cause I've had a miscarriage. I'm like, and we can cut this out if you think it's like just too weird for people. And I looked down and I picked up the plastic. It was like a doll head. I picked up the plastic head. And I looked and I said, so my baby was a girl? It was a girl? I always knew it was a girl. And then I was telling him how I was so afraid to lose every bit of her that, like, I have in my spot so I don't move anything, like, in my mind and in my soul and stuff. And so I think he was basically just telling me to, like, trust him that he had her and he has me and that he'll help me rearrange the room in my mind and in my soul and in my heart in such a way that I won't lose her but at the same time, I won't lose him either, and I can gain all. But
whoa.
Yeah, it was pretty...
That's pretty deep.
Pretty crazy.
It's pretty deep, boss.
Yeah. But the only thing is, her braids looked like black girl braids, so that was a little bit confusing to me, because I would have only had just a white baby before, and I'm like, please don't tell me there's another miscarriage coming in my future. I can't take anymore. Anyway.
So, there we are. So, I mean, it's... I could see people getting offended by the song. I don't really, you know, you're free to choose to live a life, da da da.
I don't find it offensive.
I wasn't offended by the song. I thought lyrically they did a really, really, really good job. The metaphor of the sun and the stars and the star blind, if I'm right, I mean, how can you tell? Unless Iron Maiden would like to email me. Once in a while, a band will email me and say, hey, you got this right. Or they'll say, yeah. Oh, I can't believe you did that. Mm-hmm. One guy wrote to me and he said, if I wanted to be understood perfectly, I'd have written a book and not a song. So that was pretty good. He was like gently letting me know. Like, because I was on but off based on a certain type of metal. Anyway. I thoroughly enjoyed the lyrics. The lyrics are really, really good. Really insightful, I think, coming from a certain type of perspective.
Might be rating this higher than I normally would. It might be just that I missed Iron Maiden, so then it's higher for me. Right. It's a 9.8 for me.
So it's a 9 for me because of the yeah, I just didn't get the Iron Maiden long distance runner type track. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, it was a lot of food for thought here.
Mm-hmm.
Especially considering we just got out of our Bible boogie and all that, so.
Yeah.
So, there you go. It's a 9 for me.
9.8.
Vin out.
Sorry out.
Gone.